Topic number 3. As you probably know, America's currency is not issued by the Treasury, but by the Federal Reserve System. If you look at a dollar bill, you'll see the words Federal Reserve Note. In banking terms, a note is an IOU, a promise to pay something. And it's the Federal Reserve System, not the United States government itself, that issues these IOUs which we use as currency. They're printed by the United States government mint for the Federal Reserve System for a small fee. In effect, the United States Mint, a branch of the Treasury Department, serves as a mere print shop for the Federal Reserve System. Many people assume that the Federal Reserve System is a government agency, which it is not. It is purely a privately owned central banking system. What I've just said is essential to understand. It's the key to our opening up the second front in our preventive war to save America. So before I go on, I want to say a few more words about the purely private nature of the so-called Federal Reserve System. I realize that for some of you, what I will say will be review. You've already studied the Federal Reserve System yourself and know that it is a private corporation. But my mail indicates that many of my newer listeners are not aware of this. It's not surprising that so many people believe the Federal Reserve System to be a government agency. From its very beginning in 1913, the Federal Reserve has always presented a false governmental image. To begin with, its creation in 1913 required an act of Congress. But that was not because Congress was authorizing a new government agency. Instead, it was because Congress was abdicating its constitutional duty to create and issue the nation's money. In effect, Congress gave a federal corporate charter to the new privately owned central banking system. In turn, that system was given the name Federal Reserve System. There were many Americans in those days who were bitterly opposed to the creation of a private central bank. They believed that the creation and control of our money should be left in the hands of the government, not a private corporation. Others believed that private control of our money would not be so bad if it were dispersed. What these critics opposed was concentrating our money control in just one bank. To silence these critics, the architects of the new private central bank for America did two things. The first had to do with the board of directors of the system as a whole, which they call a board of governors because it sounds better. They agreed to allow the chairman of the board to be a presidential appointee, and just for good measure, they agreed to let the appointment be subject to confirmation by Congress. The other maneuver by the Federal Reserve architects of 1913 was to abandon the idea of a single central bank. Instead, they created a system of 12 banks scattered across the United States. That gave the image of a diffusion of control over America's money. But actually, that too was only for show purposes to silence the critics. All of the real action in the Federal Reserve System takes place within the Federal Reserve Bank of New York. The other 11 regional banks just follow the lead of the New York Bank. They have power but rarely use it. And so, in effect, the Federal Reserve Bank of New York is the real central bank of the United States. The governmental cloak that seems to surround the Federal Reserve System is actually very thin. But it's enough to mislead most people because they do not look close enough. For example, people often assume that the word federal is a sign that the Federal Reserve System is a government agency. But as Abraham Lincoln once said in a famous court case, "A flower does not become a rose just because I call it a rose." And the Federal Reserve System is not a government agency just because of its name. If you will look around you, you will see many private companies that use the word Federal in their names. For example, there is even an air freight company called Federal Express. But of course, Federal Express is not a government agency. It's a private company with private stockholders. The real criterion as to whether an entity is public or private is that of ownership. And by that criterion, the 12 Federal Reserve banks are totally and unmistakably private corporations. They issue stock like any other private corporation. And my friends, the United States government does not own one penny's worth of Federal Reserve stock. Even the buildings which house the Federal Reserve banks and the land which they occupy are privately owned. They pay local real estate taxes thereon. That is even true of the building here in Washington, where the Federal Reserve Board of Governors meet. Employees are not governed by civil service rules like the government employees. The President of the United States rubber stamps each new Federal Reserve Board chairman as if he were a public official, but the minute he is confirmed, the chairman of the Federal Reserve Board passes through private doors. And behind those doors, the private Federal Reserve system does exactly as it pleases, issuing or withholding money and credit at will. Federal Reserve stock is issued only to banks, which in turn are controlled by other powerful private interests. Banks which own this stock are called member banks. Your own bank may be a member. If it is, your bank has paid money into the Federal Reserve in two forms. One form is ownership of Federal Reserve stock. This bears interest in the form of dividends of only 6%. But also, your bank is required to turn over a certain percentage of its own deposits to the Federal Reserve Bank in your district. Those deposits, called reserve deposits, bear no interest to your bank. Even so, member banks of the Federal Reserve System do receive certain services and advantages from membership, but they are also burdened and restricted in important ways. As a result, more and more banks have been withdrawing as members of the Federal Reserve System. Smaller banks, especially, have been pouring out for a breath of fresh air. Like any monopoly threatened with competition, the Federal Reserve money monopoly panicked. The Fed generally ignores Congress except when faced with trouble. When trouble does flare up, the Fed always runs to Congress for help. Most of all, they count upon a favorable hearing from the banking committees of the Senate and House. And the Wisconsin twins, Senator William Proxmire and Congressman Henry Royce, never fail to oblige. And so earlier this year, Congress passed a new law to rescue the Federal Reserve, a sort of a union shop for banks. It requires even non-member banks to place interest-free deposits with the Federal Reserve System. What is more, it creates a bureaucratic nightmare for all small banks. As usual, the little guy is being squeezed out in favor of big money. The alleged excuse for this new act is that it's needed to promote financial soundness of our nation's banking system. The argument is very simple. Supposedly, the new law is to help guarantee the safety of the underlying assets of your bank. Your bank is now forced to place a fraction of its assets in the regional Federal Reserve Bank. Your bank cannot use those funds, and so we are told it cannot lose them. But now, my friends, consider this. The Federal Reserve Banks are themselves claiming to have assets they do not have, gold assets. So your bank stands to lose everything that it deposits in the Federal Reserve Bank. And of course, if your bank loses everything, so do you. you have the option of either making or not making deposits to your bank. But your banker no longer has any such option. He is forced to be a depositor to the Federal Reserve Bank in your region, and the Federal Reserve Bank does not have part of the assets it claims to have, because, my friends, the monetary gold hoard of the United States is not owned by the United States Treasury. Instead, title to the gold has belonged to the Federal Reserve System since 1934. The Treasury is only the custodian, while the Federal Reserve Banks are the title owners, and they are now owners of gold that is long gone. They are claiming assets that do not exist. Every Saturday, the New York Times publishes the abbreviated, unaudited financial statement of the Federal Reserve System. Almost all of the assets boil down to nothing but paper, with one major exception. That is the item titled Gold Stock. The current value listed is slightly over $11 billion. That is $11,000 million. But that is at the meaningless official price of gold, a little over $40 per ounce. The real value at current market prices is closer to $200 billion. That is the Federal Reserve gold stock, so-called. It is by far the biggest asset of the Federal Reserve Banks on paper. The quantity held by each bank varies, but all 12 regional banks own portions of that gold stock. My friends, America's monetary gold hoard is often referred to as the Treasury's gold, but that is not correct. The Federal Reserve Banks have title to the gold through their gold stock. The Treasury only acts as a depository or custodian for the gold. For example, the famous United States Bullion Depository at Fort Knox is really just a giant safety deposit box. The owner of the gold is the depositor, the Federal Reserve System. For my listeners in business, financial, and banking circles, I feel I should drive this point home in one more way. You can see what I am saying if you will simply compare the balance sheets of the Treasury and the Federal Reserve System. First, look at the Federal Reserve balance sheet. On the asset side, you will see the gold stock item, formerly called gold certificates. To be concrete, for example, on October 22, 1980, the gold stock value was listed as $11.165 million. Now look at the Treasury balance sheet for that day. You will find the same figure, but on the liability side. So the Federal Reserve is a creditor with regard to the gold, and the Treasury is a debtor. That is, the Federal Reserve is the depositor of the gold, while the Treasury is only the custodian. My friends, I realize that all this may be rather involved, but also it is vitally important because the facts I have been discussing provide the basis for our second avenue of action to try to save America. I want to make these details available to you so that you can refer back to them from time to time. But let me recap the basic points to remember. First, and very important, the Federal Reserve System is a private central banking system. It is not an agency of the United States government. Second, the owner of America's monetary gold hoard since 1934 has been the Federal Reserve System, and the gold, carried as gold stock, is by far the largest asset claimed by the Federal Reserve Banks. Third, the United States Treasury does not own this alleged monetary gold. Instead, the Treasury acts only as a custodian for the Federal Reserve gold. My friends, the soundness of America's entire banking system is now tied directly to the Federal Reserve System, and the Federal Reserve is counting assets that it does not have, gold assets. The gold has been spirited away from Fort Knox and other Treasury bullion depositories. It is in your financial interest to make sure that your bank deposits are safe. It is in the interest of your banker to make sure that his deposits with the Fed are safe. And all other things being equal, it's in the interest of the Fed to make sure that its giant gold deposits with the Treasury are safe and sound. So I am now ready to suggest what we can start doing through the banking system itself. To begin with, please go to your bank to obtain some information. The information you need concerns the Federal Reserve Bank which serves your region. There are 12 Federal Reserve Banks located respectively in New York, Boston, Philadelphia, Richmond, Atlanta, Cleveland, Chicago, Minneapolis, St. Louis, Kansas City, Dallas, and San Francisco. Find out which one of these is the one which banks in your region deal with, and find out its address. In addition, find out the name of the president of that Federal Reserve Bank and the names of everyone on the board of directors. My friends, you would no doubt have to speak to a bank officer to obtain all this information, and that's good. Speak to the highest officer you can in your bank, because when you ask for all those details about the Federal Reserve Bank in your region, you're likely to raise some eyebrows. Hardly anyone ever comes in with a question like this. If he asks why you want the information, tell him you intend to write some letters, and will be glad to give him a copy. Make it clear, though, that you are not writing the Federal Reserve to complain about your own bank. You should have no difficulty in getting the address of your regional Federal Reserve Bank and the names of its president and directors. In the unlikely event, my friends, that you do encounter any resistance, just keep in mind that you have a legal right to this information. As a depositor, you are a creditor of your bank, which in turn is a creditor of the Federal Reserve Bank, and both you and your bank have the right to seek assurances that your money is safe. Once you have this information, what you should do next depends on where you are. If your banking region is served by any Federal Reserve Bank except the New York Federal Reserve Bank, then it is time to write some more letters. But the New York Federal Reserve Bank is a special case. If that is the one which serves your region, do not write any letters at this time. Write no letters to the New York Federal Reserve Bank. Just hold on to the information you have obtained about its address and directors. Now, here is what to do if your region is served by any of the other 11 Federal Reserve Banks which I listed earlier. I urge you to write a letter to the President of the Federal Reserve Bank and also to each of its directors. I realize this is a lot of work, my friends, but nothing less than our survival is at stake. We cannot cut corners. Every letter should be typed or written separately in order to have a personal impact, but it's all right to use the same wording to the President and each of the directors. To get you started, here's the outline of what I suggest you write. As in the past, feel free to modify the wording to fit your own concerns and your own way of expressing things. That will help to personalize and vary the letters they will be receiving. Other listeners, after all, will be writing to them too. But whatever you do, be sure to refer to Senator Proxmire, as you will hear in a moment. Address each letter to President or Director Federal Reserve Bank of whatever city at the Federal Reserve Bank address. Dear so-and-so, I am writing to you because of my declining confidence in the banking system of the United States. I am one of a growing number of people with similar concerns. As a key official in the banking life of our nation, my hope is that you will take action to help restore confidence before it is too late. To illustrate my growing concerns, I'm enclosing a photocopy of a letter which I sent recently to Senator William Proxmire. As chairman of the Senate Banking Committee, Senator Proxmire should be able to reassure the public about banking matters. But my correspondence with Senator Proxmire for several months has had the opposite effect. Instead of reassuring me, Senator Proxmire's replies to serious questions are alarming me. And as I discuss this with all my friends and neighbors, they too are becoming more and more worried. Since Senator Proxmire is only managing to reduce confidence in our banks by his behavior, I believe that I should turn to you for help. If elected representatives will not do their duty, perhaps responsible banking officials will. My basic concern is one which I believe you, as a Federal Reserve official, should share. I believe that the United States Treasury has been negligent, or even worse, in acting as custodian of the Federal Reserve gold. Like many other people, I am convinced that it is time for a physical inventory of the gold stocks in federal depositories. There may be little or no gold left at all. If the Treasury has defaulted on its obligation to protect the Federal Reserve gold, we are in deep trouble indeed as a nation. And the Federal Reserve System is counting assets listed as gold stocks which do not exist. As a concerned citizen and bank depositor, I appeal to you for help. I respectfully urge you to use your authority to press for a physical inventory of the Federal Reserve gold in Treasury vaults. There is no other way to stop the spreading doubts about America's entire banking system. End of letter, followed, of course, by your signature. My friends, now you know why I suggested that you make a supply of good photocopies of your next letter to Senator Proxmire. You will want to enclose a photocopy of your Proxmire letter with each letter to a Federal Reserve President and Director. By doing this, my friends, we can accomplish two things at once. For one thing, Federal Reserve System officials all across America may become a little perturbed at Senator Proxmire. They will not be pleased to hear that Proxmire is alarming you and others by his behavior. If even one Federal Reserve official should write a note of displeasure to Proxmire, it will have its impact. But aside from Proxmire himself, we are beginning to open up a whole new avenue of action through the banks. For one thing, action could take place through the Federal Reserve System itself to inventory the gold. Because, as I explained earlier, 11 of the 12 banks were originally intended for show, but they do have power. The New York Federal Reserve Bank is now tightly controlled by the Bolsheviks, who want to destroy America. But the other 11 banks are another matter. Their directors are indoctrinated basically to follow the lead of New York. For the most part, they are not given the inside track about the most secret plans, and so they could decide to flex their muscles in ways contrary to the wishes of the New York Bank. Specifically, they could decide that a gold inventory is a good idea, and they could help make it happen, my friends. At still another level, be sure to give your banker copies of your latest letter to Proxmire and to the regional Federal Reserve president and directors, because your banker, like you, has a tremendous stake in all of this, and even the American Bankers Association should press the Federal Reserve System to look into this question. They should demand that the 12 regional bank presidents raise this question with the Board of Governors of the Federal Reserve System here in Washington. My friends, I realize that all this is hard to digest at one hearing, so I urge you to listen to it over and over again if you need to, until it all begins to sink in. Because this is only the beginning of our battle on a powerful new second front, and the key to it all is the private corporation known as the Federal Reserve System. Now it's time to give you my last-minute summary. In this audio letter, I've tried to alert you to some of the latest battlefronts which are involved in the secret war now raging. During this month of October 1980, there have been all kinds of rumors that our hostages in Iran may soon be released. In topic number one, I reported to you how this came about and why. It was set in motion partly for reasons related to our national election 4 days from now. But even more importantly, the release of our hostages right now is intended to be one step on the path to nuclear war. The Russians know this and want to avoid becoming the targets of a Bolshevik-triggered American first strike. And so Russian agents in Iran are trying hard to stop the preparations for a release of our hostages at this time. But even if this crisis should fizzle out, others are being set in motion to take its place. One of these is already on the horizon in Poland. If full-scale revolution should erupt there, the Russians are prepared to retaliate by means of geophysical warfare. The true capital city of the Bolsheviks, New York City, may very well suffer a massive earthquake. According to my last-minute reports, other geophysical warfare preparations are also continuing. In AUDIO LETTER 55, I described how Russian geophysical warfare techniques triggered the explosion of Mount St. Helens last May. The final step in the process involved a squadron of cosmospheres firing their charged particle beam weapons from overhead, and as of October 26, squadrons of 4 cosmospheres each were on station over several volcanic mountains of the Northwest. These are Mount St. Helens, Mount Adams, Glacier Peak, and Mount Rainier. There is also a single cosmosphere, purely for observation, stationed high above Mount Hood. My friends, the warring factions of the Bolsheviks, Big Oil, and the Russians are bringing us closer and closer to open all-out war. They are attacking and counterattacking on many fronts, and if you want to stop our downward slide into catastrophe, we too must take action on many fronts. The truth is a powerful weapon, and we must use it in every way we can. Month by month, I am trying to bring avenues for action to your attention. And because more and more of you are taking action, I believe there is a glimmer of hope for America. Last month, for example, many of you did succeed in getting letters to the editor published. Even the Washington Star published one of them and gave it the headline, "Where is our gold?" What we are trying to do together, my friends, can be learned in only one way, and that is by doing it. I know it is not easy, but so far I believe you are doing a magnificent job, and I thank you. Until next month, God willing, this is Dr. Beter. Thank you, and may God bless each and every one of you.